From UCB Comedy Studios, this is the UCB Digital Podcast. Hey, Internet. Welcome to another episode. I'm your host, Nate Russell. Thanks for tuning in today. Oh, baby, the summer just keeps on trucking. If you're anywhere near New York City, you're probably a ball of sweat at this point because it is disgusting outside. The perfect time to cuddle up inside with the podcast or take us on the go. We make you feel cooler, guys, because we've got some cool conversations with hot comedy filmmakers on this show. And we got a hot one for you today. A couple friends of ours from Whale Thief joined us to talk about their new series that we've been dropping on UCB Comedy, as well as their process for what I think is a Guinness World Record, making a feature film in 24 hours. And they've done it three times, guys. So we break it all down with a couple of great guys, great comedy writers, comedy filmmakers from Whale Thief. We will chat with them in just a minute. To give you a little UCB Comedy update, we actually have another roof. We've been programming some of our shorts with Rooftop Films this summer. Really excited about that. It's been a lot of fun. And we got one more coming up this Friday, August 19th. And it's a feature film called Donald Cried, which premiered at South by Southwest this year. And one of our shorts is going to play before it. Really excited to be part of that presentation. And you can actually still get free tickets to that event. If you're in the New York City area, go to our UCB Digital Podcast Facebook. That's facebook.com/UCB Digital Podcast. And we've got a link with a promo code for free tickets to Friday night show. Check it out. Hope you can make it out. Rooftop Films, always a blast. We've had so much fun programming some shorts with them this summer. And hopefully it's the start of a nice relationship because we love to sort of be screening our films in that space, and they're one of the premier places to do it here in New York City. And more info on that screening too at rooftopfilms.com. Also, just wanted to point out a couple things that I've been posting on our, again, our Facebook page and on Twitter, at UCB Digital. Posted a couple of links to things that you might be find useful as filmmakers. The first one is actually for any editors out there. The Karen Schmier Editing Fellowship was announced earlier this month. And it's a really cool editing fellowship in honor of a really cool editor. For those who don't know Karen, she was Errol Morris's editor. She edited docs like The Fog of War, Mr. Death, one of my favorites, Fast, Cheap, and Out of Control. Brilliant editor, and she passed away a couple of years ago when she was struck and killed by a car in New York City in 2010. And this fellowship is for film editors, especially documentary editors. It's a great opportunity. There's all sorts of access to resources and film festivals. It's a really cool program. And if it's of interest to you, you can go to KarenSchmier.com. And we also, again, Facebooked out a link to that submission as well. A really cool thing that we came across and would be rad to be part of. I also tweeted out, if you're like me, you've been watching HBO's The Night Of, and it's gotten me obsessed with John Turturro again. And I actually also sent out, Movie Maker Magazine had this really cool list from John Turturro of 30 tips for movie makers. And it's a great list. It's a great list both for you in your work and also for you as a person. Because by the end of this list, it basically gets to things like treat people the way you'd like to be treated. So it's a really fun list of stuff, really valuable for your work. Check that out. It's on moviemaker.com, and we also sent out that Facebook link to it as well. So let's dig into today's episode. Today I sat down with Matt Kleinman and Matt Mayer, two of the members of the collective Whale Thief. Whale Thief in total is Georgie Aldaco, Benjamin Apple, Brandon Guglia, Matt Kleinman, Matt Mayer, and Zach Poitras. And these are the guys behind the New York City revival of Sketchcram, which they started, it must be almost 5 years ago that they've been running that show here in New York. And so we talked to them. How did that show come into being? What was the process of evolving it from a stage sketch show that they do every single month? They start early in the morning at 12 a.m. and by midnight, they put up a full sketch show live on stage at the UCB Theater. And then from there, they sort of have evolved it, and they have become a video-making collective, too. They make Movie Cram every year, which we go into, which is an incredible chaos in the best way possible. Hundreds and hundreds of people come together to, again, in 24 hours, write, produce, edit, and then screen a feature-length movie. They've done it three times. It's a beautiful, beautiful, sloppy, crazy, awesome, silly, ambitious process. And we break it down with these guys. They talk us through how that process goes and some of the things they've learned from doing it now three times. So we break that down. And this is also time. This interview is also time because we're releasing Whale Thief's new sketch series on our YouTube and Facebook pages here at UCB Comedy. We've already released a couple of them. The second episode is coming out the same day as this podcast. And this is a process that, and we get into this in the discussion, that is kind of the opposite of Sketch Cram, in that these guys, I think they emailed me to help them produce some of these sketches in April 2013. And so the guys who are best known for producing sketches, a whole sketch show and a whole movie in 24 hours, for this web series, it took three plus years. But you know what? Sometimes, what is it that they say? Art is never finished. It's just abandoned. And we have abandoned that series for you and your viewing pleasure on YouTube and Facebook right now through UCB Comedy. So we're excited about that, too. Matt Mayer and Matt Kleiman were nice enough to sit down, and let's jump right into it. Our conversation with two members from Whale Thief. Well, guys, we're excited that the series is coming out. When did we shoot these? Two and a half years ago?
At least.
When were they written?
Like, they were probably written like four years ago.
The winter of maybe 2012.
Yeah, Benjamin Apple was still in New York.
Well in New York.
Yeah.
Had you gotten married yet?
No, I was not married yet. I was a single man. I was a bachelor out on the town, willing to give up a weekend to write sketch comedy instead of spend it with my wife.
Yeah, you know, we when we showed these at the theater, like as part of our live show, I sort of commented, like it occurred to me, like, oh, you know, these guys are known for doing stuff that is all in one day, get it done. And you achieve really big projects, like feature-length movies in a day.
Yeah, all it takes for us.
This series took 3 years.
Yeah, indeed, indeed.
Well, you know, there's a yin and a yang to everything.
Exactly. You know?
Absolutely.
Well, maybe that's also part of the DNA, right? Is that you have to do it quickly, otherwise you're going to sit on it.
I think so.
It's true, and like quite a bit of the, let's call it a delay, and we can maybe call it the delay, capital T, capital D. I think a big part of the delay is that since we do stuff so fast so often, we are like, yeah, we could do a ton of stuff. Yeah. We could just do like an obscene amount of stuff because, tomorrow it'll be over.
Yeah.
And then it was like, okay, so now we have a ton of stuff to do, and we have this other big project to finish. And, the delay creeps up.
I know.
Yeah.
It happens. It happens to the best of us.
We even like crammed the shooting of it pretty hard. Like we shot a lot of it.
We shot like 12 things.
We convinced everyone to take
days.
A week off
and
like shoot it there. We even had Nathan came and like helped us out. We went like to Matt's house in Mahwah.
Yeah, my parents' house in Mahwah. We like roped in some doctors from the
That's right. Doctor's office.
Yeah, we got a doctor's office by talking to some of my parents' friends.
Yeah.
They thought we would be in there and out of there in an hour. Wasn't exactly the case, I guess.
Well, but that's a shame.
We didn't say, but they didn't ask kind of thing.
Yeah.
That's our bad. They were like, it's still happening. Okay. Okay, yeah. We'll just be in here watching the Mets game. Sure.
That's right.
Well, we're very excited that UCB, that you, and this still probably would not have been released if it wasn't for you, Nate, coming, you know, being like, hey, I know you guys made these things. Can we just please release them?
Yeah.
We're so grateful to you for
incredibly grateful.
And I know that feeling, you know what I mean? Yeah. It's like the feeling of like, I just want to get this thing out there. So excited that to help facilitate it, excited that they're getting out there. And we'll push them all out in two seasons.
Mm-hmm.
This is two seasons worth of content.
Two seasons of Whale Thief sketches.
Yeah. So let's go back to the beginning of Whale Thief. You guys came together over Sketchcram, right?
Yeah. I think so. Because
Sketchcram was a show initially. It was Gethard.
Yeah, let's go back to the very beginning. Yeah. So my understanding of the origin of Sketchcram was that Charlie Sanders and Chris Gethard and probably some other people were on a Torco gig, driving up somewhere. I don't know why I want to say like Amherst or something, but that whatever. Uh-huh. Let's just say that. And they, on the way there, found out that they had been booked to do both improv and sketches when they thought they were just doing improv.
Oh, man.
And so they just like were like, let's see what we can cobble together. And they like wrote a bunch of sketches in the van on the way up there and performed them, probably along with some like older ones they did or something like that. And then afterwards, I think they were so psyched on that experience that they were like, let's like do this as a show at the theater. And so they did a show for a few years at UCB. And I think that, I mean, there had been like a whole evolution of the Cram. I think at the time, my understanding is that show, they met at like noon. I think it was still like a little loosey-goosier.
Yeah.
There was still kind of like improv as a part of it. Did you ever do it or did
no.
you ever see it or anything, Nick?
No.
Because it predates me a little bit, but not by too much. But you guys might have been around to see the
I
first
was like
iteration of
08.
It.
I don't remember it.
Yeah, I was around in 06, but I might not have caught it. I was pretty improv only for a little while.
Because I remember because Jesse Lee was the first person to tell me about it because he was like writing, he was in like Charlie Sanders' sketch class and he wrote for it. And I remember it was like Adam Pally. It was like, you know, everybody at the time was like, dude, I mean, who are.
I mean, it's a really fun idea.
Yeah, it's super great.
It's a great idea.
It was a blast. But I think. Anyway, at some point when Charlie moved away or whatever, the people that were running it it fell away and people moved. And then at some point it got founded up again in L.A. And then at the time, and then I was taking classes in L.A. I took classes here for a year and then I had to go home for some personal stuff to San Diego for a year. To take care of some stuff with my family, and I would like commute up to take classes.
Yeah.
And I took a class with Kevin Peterson, who is a teacher and a writer, a great writer out there in L.A., and he asked me to write for the Sketch Cram in L.A. when I think it was run by him. I think it was Alan McLeod ran it, too.
Whoa.
I think Matt Jones. It was some weird phase where they had, like, six directors of it for some reason.
Wow.
I think Matt Rogers, maybe even Sean Clements.
Ben Rogers?
No, Matt Jones. What did I just say?
You said Matt Rogers.
Oh, I meant Ben.
Matt Rogers is a current excellent
right, I don't
mean,
actor. Don't mean Matt Rogers. I mean Matt Jones.
Okay.
Anyway, and I had a great time, and then I came back here, I was just psyched about that idea. I had talked to some other people about, like it was in the air about who had – Chris Kelly. I was working with Chris Kelly at The Onion, and he had done it, and he had been like, it would be great to restart it up here, and I think he was even thinking about doing it, but he ended up not being able to do it. And then I grabbed Arthur Meyer and was like, why don't we start this up? And so me and Arthur – pitched it to Nate Dern, who was like newly minted AD, had just put me on a Herald team. And so I thought it was a great time to ask for another show. And so me and Arthur asked him to do Sketch Cram. He was all for it. And then I think he recommended Benjamin Apple to do a video for the first one, too.
Cool.
He was like, you guys should rope in Ben. So we did that. Arthur at the time recommended Poitras to like just to like write or something like
that. Because they were boys from Pangea.
From Pangea, yeah. And I think Arthur was just doing some matchmaking with me and Poitras as friends. I had maybe met Poitras like one time.
Wow.
But I think he just knew that we would work together well, which turned out to be very true. And then we did the first Cram, and I think Gulia was a writer and performer for the first Cram.
Yeah.
And I had never really worked that closely with him and just had a really good time working with him and knew his sort of like reputation, was doing a lot of stuff. So then the next month, I think Arthur was just getting too busy. I think he had been just hired or was about to be hired at Fallon or something like that. It was like early on, so he was getting too busy, but he was like, Zach should replace me. And then I was like, all right, sure. And then we also grabbed Gulia to help direct that second one. And then I guess Ben was still doing the videos for a while. And then Mayor, did you do that one or did you do the next one?
Well, I had been, there was like, originally there was a policy where when they made videos, they would like have actors on call. And it was like a little bit more, if you've done Sketch Cram recently, you know that we kind of like let the video directors kind of do whatever they want. And, you know, that's has its pros and cons. But a pro for the organizers is that we used to gather a list of on-call actors that then those directors could call upon. And the agreement with those on-call actors is, hey, you're on call for this video. But if we don't call you in, you're stage acting next time guaranteed. So I had been on call.
So
as
funny
a,
how thoughtful we were in the very beginning of Sketch Cram. Like, the Sketch Cram today is thrown together so quickly and terribly. And, like, by the skin of our teeth every time.
Every time.
Back then, we had a master list of, like, all the people who had, like, submitted to be on it.
Yeah.
And, like, we're very, like...
people we were excited about. We had lists of who had done it. We don't do that anymore. Yeah. It's like, yeah. So I had been an on-call actor for the video, wasn't cast in the video, so did stage for the second show. And so I stage acted in the second show, and Benjamin had made a video with Pat O'Brien that maybe Pat had written. I can't remember, but it was like a something about dogs on an airplane.
Oh, no, Poitras wrote that.
Poitras wrote
that. And it's a great video, and it's a video that was lost by UCB Comedy.
Really?
No offense, UCB Comedy. But this is when, like,
I didn't know that.
Remember, well, this is before you were there, but, like, there was a time when, you know, when we used to have to upload everything to UCB Comedy. If you wanted to be
on
UCB,
the old site.
On the old site and not YouTube. And every at some point, some apocalyptic event happened, and every video was deleted that had ever been uploaded to UCB Comedy.
Yeah.
And it didn't ever come back.
No, because I think the original file is, like, lost or something like that. And that, which, and it was a great sketch. Yeah, it was about the TSA admitting that every dog that's ever been on a plane has died.
Oh, I remember that one. Yeah.
Very funny. And I remember, you know, watching it, and, like, Nathan knows this because we were on our first, they were called beta teams once upon
a time,
the UCB Comedy digital video teams. Mm-hmm. I was so blown away by the fact that Benjamin and Pat and that team was able to make something funny within such a small period of time.
Yeah.
And we'd done that a little bit, but it was, like, green screened and it was shot well and it was just funny.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just remember being so blown away that I kind of cornered Benjamin and just started talking to him about it. And then the next month was making videos.
Yeah.
Kind of had, like, a short residency.
Were there videos in the first iteration of the show? Is that, were videos part of it, or was that?
Because
the technology sort of changed pretty quickly around that time.
I'm sure
too,
they
right?
did some. I know they did a video one when I did it in L.A.
Yeah.
They certainly did that. Like, I stole that idea too from them. I should say, like, a lot of our process, like, it's been refined in every iteration, but it's a lot, I think, mapped after the L.A. Cram, at least, like, starting earlier. And I think we still, actually, now we start the earliest. I think, because we start at 9 a.m. But video was one of the things that they had been doing out there. But then that's what we started really pushing into, I think, here and getting excited about. So then at a certain point, forget if it was like Video Cram or did we become Whale Thief before or after Video Cram?
I honestly can't remember.
If I remember, it's actually, I remember you guys didn't have a name when we were shooting this series that's coming out now.
That's right.
That
and we thought for a while we were going to maybe be Cabin or The Retreat.
That's,
and then we ended up being...
Yeah, because it was just the idea of, like, going away and, like, polishing some Sketch Cram sketches and writing some new ones. We just, like, went away for a weekend. The five of us. This is before Georgie was in the group.
So we had been, to kind of, like, bridge the gap there, we had been making a lot of stuff together. We had done Sketch Cram at that point for over a year.
Uh-huh.
We liked working with each other. And we were like, but it's kind of a funny thing because we produced together. Because, you know, you write and direct and stuff, and sometimes you perform in it, but we've never made anything together other than the show, which is kind of this weird – it's always guests. It's more guest-heavy than it is, you know, the people who make it. So we were like, you know what? We actually love making stuff with each other in this kind of, like, arm's-length kind of way, in a way. Let's see if we can make some stuff as a team. So we went away and wrote a bunch of stuff.
And there were just a bunch of sketches that we loved so much from the stage show that we were like, it would be a shame not to shoot these or do something with these. So we might as well do that with each other.
And so just to sort of, like, track this, so the stage show starts. You sort of have some rough people. Arthur drops out pretty early. He gets busy. He got some transition. You're having video as a component every show from show one.
Yes, yeah.
And starting, like, a core group sort of, like, starts producing this stuff pretty quickly.
Yeah.
So basically it's like Kleinman and Poitras and Gulia and Benjamin for a while.
For a while.
And then after, like, 4 months, they kind of invite – because I'd – after that second show, I made videos probably 3 months.
Yeah,
you'd
probably done it the most of any guest director.
Yeah.
You were Adam Sachs probably.
Yeah.
And you guys both made great stuff.
Yeah.
But
Adam has made some awesome stuff.
And video? I remember specifically asking you to help us because I was like, we need somebody who's got their, like, shit together to help us put together, I think, Video Cram. Unless it was Movie Cram.
So the the origin of that is up in the air a little bit. Having been, like, when I was asked to be in the group officially, quote unquote, I don't remember exactly. But the as far as I remember, the like first kernel of Movie Cram actually came as I had cornered Benjamin and he and I were at the Beast
that
talking
very
about
first, that like third show,
the second show. And it was at the time, it was not so. So for those listening who don't know what Movie Cram is a big project where we get together over 100 people and we make a feature length film in a day from start to finish. That wasn't what we talked about at the time. It was like, what else could you cram? Becomes that thing, because it was stage show and then videos, and Benjamin having made the videos and me making videos. We were just talking about that, and it felt other, even though it's obviously a big part of it. So it's that automatically creates a vector, you know, from stage show out into video land. And we just started. We was like, could we make a movie in like 3 months? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so that's what started the conversation. Then obviously you guys were roped in pretty quickly. And then when I was officially in the group, we talked about it more.
Yeah.
And as far as I remember, Video Cram, which was something we did like a summer and a half, like 2 summers into doing Sketch Cram, was something where we did only videos. And as far as I remember, it was to see if we could, if there were enough excellent video makers to eventually pull off Movie Cram, because Zach had already pitched the like thing where if people wore different colored t-shirts, you'd be able to recognize them as that character throughout a feature film, because they'd have to be played by multiple actors. And so as far as I remember, it was like, okay, well, 15 videos will make up about an hour show.
Right.
Can
so
we
you
get
Movie
15
Cram,
plus team?
That Video Cram was to test the Movie Cram idea?
I'm positive.
Man, positive? I don't remember it at all that way, but I don't have a competing narrative, so this is rapidly becoming the truth.
Huh.
What Mara is saying is rapidly becoming the truth.
I have a lot of control right now, and I'm going to take advantage of it.
I have no alternate history. I don't remember
it
that
remember
way,
that,
but it's plausible, I guess. That insinuates a lot more forethought than I thought we had, but also we've been doing it for 2 years, so I'm sure we'd had every thought by that point.
Well,
about,
when
like,
Movie Cram had come up as an idea, we were frightened of it.
Yeah.
I mean, just we were like, that's outrageous. And then when it got cracked open with the multiple teams working at the same time to make the movie, it was like, then all you need is people to – it started just to kind of flow out really easily then.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, all you need is like 15 or 20 teams to be working at the same time. And then they make their scenes and, you know, and then we just put it in a playlist and we play it. Like it kind of more or less flowed out of us once that idea came. It was like, and, you know, this was several years ago now. I mean, that Video Cram was probably 4 years ago, 4.5 or something.
Sure.
No, maybe that's not true.
No,
3.5 to 4.5. And
it would be, because this would be 4 years ago, 5 years ago.
So,
because this is going to be, if we do a Movie Cram this
will be
year,
the fourth one.
This fall when we're supposed to.
So that'll be 3 years.
That would be number 4.
But that'll be 3 years between Movie Crams, because there's the first one is 0 years.
Right.
So that was like back then when the big video thing was just really starting to take and people could afford their equipment and, you know, all that stuff. And so we were like, all right, screw it. Let's do it. And, I mean, Video Cram was outrageous and fun and
Video Cram was great.
And so conceptually, Video Cram was videos that were disconnected. It wasn't about a narrative. It was just a show of videos made in a day in the same way that Sketch Cram is a sketch show made in a day.
Correct.
Yeah, it was
but
basically
all videos.
Right. It was like same process, except instead of one or two video directors coming in and cherry picking the sketches they like, all of the sketch comedy had been written specifically for video ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Had lots of video makers come in. We kind of gridded out what they could take. We had lots of actors on hold, and they all just peeled out.
So let me try to like section off some of this stuff, because there's a lot to talk about here, and this is all very cool. So it sounds like the way that the group came together was pretty organic. It was people who you sort of found and were match made with and who kept showing up. And
I also think there's like an element of everybody found the Cram too.
Yeah.
Like it was like clearly the people that wanted it to happen found their way in too, I think. Like it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But here's what I would observe from the outside, that what's interesting about you guys as a group who have developed, and I haven't worked as much with Georgie. But like having known you guys from the earlier iteration, especially when we worked on this series 3 years ago, you guys all have a similar characteristic in that you're all incredibly detail-centric when it comes to comedy and jokes and style and choices. And it's interesting to me that the thing that brought all of you meticulous, detail-oriented, obsessive fuckers together was something that happens in such a chaotic space.
Yeah. Well, the yin and the yang, too. Again, it's still the same thing. Like, you're drawn to the thing that you're worst at, I guess, or you're drawn...
Yeah.
Like, the thing that you hate, you're drawn to the most, like, or vice versa. The thing that you need the most is the thing that isn't your strength. Or...
So, I can, just speaking to my own personal experience, back to that pulling, you know, Benjamin into a corner, I was like, it's because I was blown away. It's because, like, I would spend on, like, a two-minute video, I'd spend, like, 80 hours of my life and, like, making sure it was this and that. And he gets, like, 6 hours to make the whole thing. And I was like, how did you do it? So it is true in a way, but it's because of the fascination point in a way.
Yeah.
It was like you could see it. It was so far in the distance, you had to start walking towards it to get a better sense of what it looked like.
I think there's a lot of way to – but it's all – I think there's – it is – it's fun to accept your limitations. It's fun to be like, well, that's the best we could do. But there's only – and, like, kind of have fun with that and be like, yeah, that's really funny. And, like, there's a joy to that. Yeah. But in order to get to that joy, I think you have to feel like you've exhausted all other – like, you really had to – like, you – it's not because you're settling for that and you're justifying it later by being like, well, you know, it's comedy. It's like you tried your hardest and you this is as good as you can do.
Yeah.
And, like, there's still good stuff in there, which is great. But, like, everything else you just have to accept – and then you can truly appreciate the joy of doing work that isn't absolutely perfect, which not all work has to be absolutely perfect.
Yeah. And so, it's one of the things I think that creates the energy that a Sketch Cram show has, Movie Cram has, Video Cram had, just watching videos that are part of Sketch Cram has, is that it's somewhere between planned and unplanned. It's somewhere between sketch and improv in the energy of it. You know, like you'll do a sketch live. You'll have written lines. The people have to memorize those lines. It's a near impossible task. They're going to forget pieces of it, and you can feel it as an audience.
Sure.
And you also know that they made it today, so you can. So it's okay. You know what I mean? There's this like weird interplay between very dangerous and totally safe that's like constantly being played with.
Dig it. So a Sketch Cram room, just to talk about Sketch Cram specifically.
Yeah.
Having done it for a few years, what are the qualities going into a Sketch Cram that are necessary to sort of make the best product, you know, in that limited time?
Sure.
How do you
approach
it?
For one thing, the only, like, cheat or whatever that we do for Sketch Cram and for Movie Cram is that people come in with ideas. We aren't expecting people to generate good ideas right there on the fly. So people coming in with good stuff is always the best thing to do. And even with Movie Cram, people come in with movie concepts to pitch to each other.
Yeah.
Deciding what to do, like a lot of the times those are like half pitches that become, you know, whatever, things like that happen in the room. But being prepared, you know, if you fail to plan, you plan to fail.
But even inside of that, it almost feels like then the danger is that what you would come out with is writer's room funny. But that doesn't actually play because it's such a short amount of
time.
And
so, and what you're describing, you know, that happens plenty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Almost with like scary regularity, the shows that we think are going to be the funniest are, and the versus the shows that we think are like going to be real like clunkers. And we like never let anybody know when we feel these ways. And also, like, it's always going to be fine, but it's always the ones that we think are going to be funniest don't go that well. And the ones that we think are going to be clunkers like rule.
And then there's the other thing which we apply to it, which is that kind of classic comedy thing of like, you don't know if it's going to work. So we'll hit it with volume, you know, like eventually write on the day somewhere between 2 and 4 sketches, each individual writer. And they'll get one in, or maybe they'll get one in a video in, or maybe if 2 of them are outstanding, they'll get 2 in.
We don't even do that anymore because we've tried to make Sketch Cram shorter. So
sometimes it still happens.
Sometimes.
It's rare, but it happens. But like, you'll pitch somewhere between 5 and 12 things. So like, we just kind of come at it with like knowing that a lot of stuff is going to get cut out, and we just move quickly through it, because a lot of times after the writers pitch and we pitch, we'll go off and kind of pick what pitches we think they should pursue.
Yeah.
And a lot of times the stuff that we thought would be great, they just run into a roadblock when they're writing it and just put it aside and then do something else instead. So it becomes like, it just becomes a knowing that you're going to make something that has fat and then cut the fat off.
Sure.
We write 3 hours worth of show and then produce one.
Yeah, that's always the best. I mean, you know, that whole, like, the best way to know if a show is going to be good is, like, how good is the cut sketches. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. You got to just write a ton and cut. That's the process.
That's really interesting, too, the fact that it's not even that you wind up with an hour of a produced show. It's that you wind up with 3 hours of written material. That's very impressive on a monthly basis. And how is that process, like, what's the structure of the process to get it ready for rehearsals? What's that review process like? Is there a final say?
Yeah, so we do that thing. We do that thing again where we do a table read of everything that was written, and then the directors go off and we pick the show based on that. And then we give notes on those sketches, and people then have like an hour to get their rewrites in.
Mm-hmm. And then throughout the day, they'll maybe check in with other writers or check in with one of the directors and see how it's going and kind of play it off.
And then at the end of it, the, you know, writing is still, at least, you know, we all direct a little bit differently, but like I don't lock the script until like my like third run through. I bet the other guys do a similar thing where, you know, we'll often take, if there's like a weak script, like, you know, we'll make sure that we'll do rewrites and stuff like that. We also, you know, if the actors improvise something really funny or have a good suggestion, we're very open to that sort of stuff. Yeah.
How much is the process also thinking towards, I guess I'm also wondering, because you know who your actors are, too. Mm-hmm. You can be sort of writing towards them. How much of it is, like, premise, you know what I mean?
Yeah, not a ton, because also since we get so many different people from, like, disparate – like, one of the great things about Sketchcram is that it's a lot of – so many people meet for the first time at UCB or work together for the first time doing Sketchcram.
I didn't know. I don't think we'd ever met probably before I did it.
So, like, stuff like that. So a lot of the times when people will be like, the writers will always ask, who are the actors? And, like, inevitably, like, at least half the actors, they'll all be like, who is that? I have no idea. So, but sometimes if people do know somebody and they want to write for them, mm-hmm. or in certain cases where we'll do theme crams, where we'll put more emphasis on that sort of stuff, people will write to specific actors for sure.
And it also seems like that there is an element of the concept of this show, and maybe coming back to that observation about the nature of the way you guys are, meticulous, detail-oriented, that is like you seem to have a very firm grasp on the big, on the macro of how to put it together. Mm-hmm. Therefore, when you're inside of it, you can let it be fast and chaotic.
That's very true. Right? We like create a process before we get into the process, and we trust the process because you can't kind of you can't reconfigure the process from within it.
Once it's happening.
Yeah.
And it must be that's the yin and yang too.
Yeah. You just have to you just have to trust the process. You have to trust the roadmap that's been put in front of you. And you just got to make sure that you aren't dawdling too much. Because like we always, I mean like we'll every four crams or something, we're fucked or something.
Yeah. It's like we have to.
We're getting ahead of it. We're doing great. And then we
finish our run through at like 11:30 and the actors have 15 minutes to walk over there and finish.
Yeah.
Figuring out their lines.
Wild.
Yeah, it can happen that way. But something about the process and about casting, actually, that's interesting is we have to do this thing called the grid we call the grid, which is the worst part. And it's basically like, you know, you draw the short straw and you're the whale thief member that has to do the grid. And basically what that is it's not – we don't have enough time to rehearse everything one at a time. So we have to rehearse things 2 and 3 sketches at a time. So we have 2 or 3 directors that are always on hand. Usually it's all us. Sometimes we have – great guest directors, and so we'll be working with actors at the same time, and so we have to know, okay, we have these 3 2-person sketches, we have to cast 6 of the 7 actors in them and have it be separate. So sometimes a writer will write something with one of the actors from that day in mind, and it's like, well, it can't happen.
Yeah. I hate the what sucks about that is because you're making big decisions about casting different people in roles. You're also trying to be cognizant of like making sure everybody has a good meaty role. Like we want to make sure everybody has at least 1 good comedic role.
Yeah.
At least maybe 1 to 2. But that are also not overloaded with memorization.
Sure.
And also you don't want people to be too light because like that always feels terrible if there's like one person who is like barely in the show. And all of that always happens simply because when you're there doing the grid, you can't possibly remember. Like, and we have the names of the characters in the sketches, but no recollection of which one's, like, the funny one, which one's the, like, mm-hmm. which one's anything. So it's just, like, all kind of remembering it.
And then if you're off doing the grid, you didn't read the rewrites that people did.
Right.
And sometimes, like, for example, I remember this really funny sketch where like Michael Shannon, it's basically a Harambe, but Michael Shannon on stage, and like a little kid comes on stage and it's like scared what Michael Shannon's going to do because he's such an, you know, an in it actor. But anyway, there was a role that was added to it during the rewrite. There was like a huge beefy role and you just don't even know when you're doing the grid and you see this, you're like, who's the trainer? What is that? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then you give somebody the trainer who's like overloaded because you're like, well, I just need somebody to have the trainer. And then it's like,
yeah,
you know, it's really stressful, but it makes the cram possible. And yeah. One of the cool things about it is that a lot of times people will get a role they never would have gotten on their mod team because it's so off type for them. And then they'll crush it and do like a really cool, unusual thing with it.
Our
cool.
actors for Kramer always really we give that disclaimer all the time about like we hope you have good roles. Please, if you feel overloaded, let us know. If you feel light, let us know.
Yep.
And our actors are always like good sports about it, and often like we'll trade roles and stuff like that. And
that's cool.
A very nice thing to do. It's you know, strength of like the UCB that everybody just wants everyone to succeed.
And so for you guys as Whale Thief, so again to track back into that. So you're doing the sketch cram, you try out the video cram, you go off and write these sketches that became the series that's coming out now. You're starting
same process too. Tons of pitches, tons of sketches, cut out
what rises to the top.
Yeah.
And but so it seems like you're sort of like, and then you sort of give yourselves a name, right? And then suddenly it's Sketch Cram produced by Whale Thief as opposed to a group of
randos.
Yeah.
Correct.
Names, right? Yeah. And that also starts to track into the timing of Movie Cram, right? You weren't
probably, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that might have even been the reason, part of the reason we wanted a name was because we were like this thing.
We're going to do a big thing.
We're going to do a big thing, and it seems weird to not have us be a unit.
Yeah.
It's definitely like unit versus group of names.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I do think that's accurate. Yeah.
And so what about the process of Movie Cram? And obviously it's a different medium, right? But what about the process that you developed on Sketch Cram is applicable towards Movie Cram? And what's unique about working in that sort of going to make a movie in a day space?
Yeah. So, I mean, a lot of it's, you know, still, it's sort of just like a bigger version in some regards to some, such that we all come in with pitches, you know, we still go off and we narrow down those pitches to what we think is producible and good. We talk about that, but then we do spend more time talking about the ideas because we have to pick one and we pick the one with all of the writers.
Yeah. And the big difference, the big difference after that moment is that you're working towards a unit.
Yeah,
but you know that that unit is going to be made up of 15 unique voices.
Yeah.
But we know that we want that. That's like part of the fun of it. We could choose to try and avoid it, but it's unavoidable.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't avoid it. We lean into it. We don't say, oh, and make sure to do this or make sure to do that. People are just trying to. One of the keys is you have all of these different people trying really, really, really hard to do the same thing.
Yeah.
So that makes it so that it kind of covers its own ass, you know? So they split off and write all their scenes separately. The big difference is that they have been assigned specific scenes within this larger narrative as opposed to the scene that they came up with. Maybe they don't get to do that one. You know what I mean? Like,
it should also be noted that this is like the smallest portion of like their day, like their time writing the actual script.
Yeah.
Everybody gets like an hour to write like 8 pages of the script for the first time because we've spent the vast majority of the time in the room beating the thing out together.
Figuring out the outline, figuring out what those specific scenes are going to be that we will then assign.
Yeah. Key lines and things like that.
But it seems like that's good screenwriting process anyway.
Yeah, right? I think
the actual scripting is the part that should be easy because the roadmap is there.
You have the roadmap, yeah.
And you're doing that with, what's the group of writer size for a Movie Cram?
It's a Hobbit's Dozen.
It's a Hobbit's Dozen, which is 14. our 14 our Fellowship of the Ring.
Yeah,
nerds will know what we're talking about.
Yeah, I hope. Or maybe I always forget if we have it right or wrong. But anyway.
No, it's right. It's 13, right.
And then they add one.
They add Frodo, and he becomes.
No, Bilbo.
Oh, they add Bilbo.
Yeah, this is for the Hobbit.
Okay,
yeah,
you're right.
The original. Okay. Yeah.
And then 14 is not.
They go out. The most important difference between Sketch Cram and Movie Cram is the Condorcet voting system.
It's true.
And which is Condorcet.
It's Condorcet, it's and Condorcet. We've been calling it. It's Condorcet, and we've been calling it Condorcet for
so long until just recently learned that it's Condorcet.
So what is that? I don't know what that
so
is.
So the Condorcet voting system is the most accurate voting system known to man, according to mathematicians.
Okay.
And what it does is, rather than voting via a democracy, a flawed system that we all know the dangers of, you take all the things that you want to vote on and you rank them. And then this algorithm takes those rankings and faces those off against each other in one-to-one battles until it has one that has been victorious the most times, I believe, and that is the top.
It's similar to runoff, but somehow more complex.
Okay.
Similar to instant runoff voting, but more complex.
And so you use that in what phase of the process? In the writing process.
In the very beginning, when we're to pick the final idea, we do 1 to 2 Condorcet voting runs.
So basically we have all of the pitches that we've kind of narrowed it down. Like, these are the great pitches.
Mm-hmm.
One from everybody. And then we kind of – we remind everybody what those pitches were. We go off. We Condorcet. We get like – we pop out like 3 to 5. We talk about those. And then maybe we'll do it again if it – we did a blind hand vote to actually – instead of flipping a coin, basically, for the last one.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we were down to Cicada Hunk and this bathtub? And this idea of
Soppy Sam or
Soppy John.
Soppy John.
Soppy John. Oh. It was like a haunted bathtub thing where you had to be in your if you took a bath in all of your clothes, it would like bring up this haunted ghost that would try and kill you. And there were a lot of funny things about it. But we ended up, we couldn't decide between the room. So we like literally closed our eyes and had somebody count.
Yeah. So that sounds really cool. And it sounds like it's a very thought out sort of like writing process. What's the thought towards the production process of putting this movie together? How does it go once it leaves that room? The other thing that feels different is you don't get to rewrite until the last minute, right? The rewriting is editing.
Yeah, so we're able to get two rewrites in. So we do a table read at like 7 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that's a clusterfuck because everybody, like, there are characters that have not been standard, like so many things haven't been standardized because we leave so much up to like the people scripting to like figure out like what job the person has or something like that.
For example, in A New McDonald's, the first movie, we never discussed what job they had that they were losing to then decide to make the McDonald's. And so multiple writers wrote different things, and we just picked the funniest one and rewrote into that.
Yeah, they all had toilet jobs. So the we do a read through at 7, and then we do a big rewrite there in order to like fuse things together. And then for the second... Then the directors are coming in, and there's just hordes of directors who are all like already we're late at every step of the process, so they're like waiting for a long time, and then we do a big read
with everybody
there of the script, and at that point the grid becomes the nightmare. I don't know what we call the grid for Movie Cram is the mats crossed to bear, and it's just the worst. Because what he has to do is now take every scene, cast each individual scene, and give it to a director that it would be good for.
And then have similar production constraints. And so let's just say, for example, I know if there's an apartment scene, scene 12 is an apartment scene with three actors, and scene 55 is an apartment scene with three actors. It might not even be the same apartment, but I'm like, you have access to similar production stuff, including those cast. You just kind of figure it out.
Yeah.
So it's a huge nightmare. It's basically the same concept as the Sketchcram grid, only with over 100 actors and with.
Would you say it's literally 100 times worse? Exactly 100 times worse?
I'd say it's around exactly 100 times worse. It's really nuts. Yeah. And it's kind of a crazy thing because I have to know the script pretty well.
Yeah, that was the mistake. A key mistake we made this
key
year
mistake.
Was that Mayer thought had a good idea, which we all signed off on. This idea that he would start the grid early, like, oh, I'll get a jump on the grid while you guys are doing the second, like the rewrites or something. But then because of that, It sounds like a good idea.
Yeah.
But so much changes in that second rewrite. That Mayer had no idea what the movie was anymore.
No idea. I was like looking at character names I'd never heard of. Same thing as the Sketchgram thing, but only, okay, wait, what is this scene even?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I hadn't even listened to the movie. I hadn't gotten a chance to read it yet myself.
Yeah. So I think which it was just you probably should have listened to the second read through. But that's like exactly when we want to get the jump on, because once the second read through is done, it's great to just suddenly have scenes ready for directors to take off. So,
but one of those things is it's like you. No, it wasn't. I didn't. It's not that I skipped the director's read through. It was like it was the one before, which I guess is the second, right?
If we That's one, the first. Two, no, that would have been the first.
So yeah, I skipped the first one.
You skipped the first read through?
I think I maybe read it or something. I can't remember. Oh, I was trying to do it off the outline, I think is what it was. Because we were like, we have so much of it. But anyway, point is, it was like, oh, I can save time, but I lost more time than I'd saved. Because I got to work for longer, but it was, you know, it didn't work out.
Yeah.
Yeah, you learn a lot of lessons.
But then once you're at the process, once you're at the point where directors are sort of taking these scenes off, they are sort of to their own devices through delivery?
Yeah, but yes. Oh, exactly. Yes,
we tell them, you have all the resources you need. You have to bring us back by, I think we say 11 or 11:30.
At night, yeah.
Finished scenes.
And 11. It's got to be 11.
Mm-hmm. 11. And we finished scenes, and they have to be named this way, and so we use the naming in order to put them in a playlist so that I'll play in the right order, because, you know, again, a director will have scene 14 and scene 55, and it's like, well, I don't know. You know, I don't remember what you had, and we have a spreadsheet to double-check everything, but we email them all their individual...
what it is, and then they have to bring that back.
And then they bring that back, and nobody, literally nobody has seen the movie until it's being played.
Yeah. But what's great about that is the individual directors and their actors get to make a ton of choices.
Yeah.
And so you'll see just like the best movie cram scenes are the ones where it's in the hand of a really confident director who makes like a big comedic choice.
Yeah.
And just like knocks that out of
that
the park.
That is like within the spirit of the movie, people tend to do, which is really cool. We're all trying to make, it's impossible to make it great. So they all are trying so hard to make it great that it becomes great.
Yeah.
And then does it feel like is it getting 3 years in? Is it getting easier to make? Is it just as hard every year? I imagine it's a unique challenge.
Yeah.
Time, but you must get better at the process.
You'd think so. But
there are parts of it that are easier, and then there are parts of it that are harder. It's like, okay, so that first year we made the easiest movie to make in a way. You know, it was like after we made the movie, we're like, oh, the movie is kind of a meta version of what we are doing, which is like we're taking this thing that is truly a corporate concept and we're making our own version of it, which was what a new McDonald's was. A group of ragtag idiots making a McDonald's. So so there are challenges that crop up as you try to create variety. Right. We had to say, okay, this is a great movie idea, this second or third one, but can't do it because it's too much like this one. It's too much like two movies now. Too much like three movies now.
Yeah, because you tend to want to do like a bunch of friends get together and do something. That's like what the first two were, which is why I was so excited. I thought the script for the most recent one was the best one that we had done so far because it was just a genre movie. It was just like this like love story with like a sci-fi element, and it wasn't the same. It felt very distinct from the other ones. Yeah.
So there are challenges, and then again, you're trying to refine the process, and maybe you make terrible decision that you should never have made, and you should just do the grid when the grid's supposed to get done.
Sure. Well, and I know we're climbing, you got to go in a minute here, but this also, as a group, you guys have translated beyond just Sketchgram, right? Like, sort of for a while, you guys were pretty much all at Funny or Die, right?
Oh, yeah.
Did that happen together? Or did that happen sort of organically?
That was piece by piece, too. Poitras was there with Pat O'Brien and Dan Abramson. And Jason Flowers is like a tiny little office for a while. I guess Natasha must have been there, too, the graphics person who's now the senior designer. And then I got hired up. And then when they wanted to do video, we were like, yeah, you guys should hire Mayer. And then they brought Mayer on.
Yeah, that was the inorganic part where they were like, we don't, you know, the head of the office was like, I don't really know much about videos. And they were like, we got a video guy.
Yeah.
Get Mayer, I'll take care of it.
That's cool. What's it like working in that environment together with the sort of experience you have as an independent group, working together in a more professional setting that's not your own?
It was great. I mean, it in this particular case, I mean, we were tasked to make internet sketch comedy. So we just kind of, it was cool. We got to kind of fall in and make some stuff that we probably would have made on our own. But, you know.
Yeah, in retrospect, I wish we had done more because, like, my favorite stuff was always the stuff that we ended, like, you know, the hoverboard video or stuff like that where we did, it was just like the three of us just like figuring
it out together and just making it.
Yeah.
And occasionally we were able to do that, and a lot of the time we weren't. And at those moments, it was great. Throughout it is pretty great. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, you get to, you I don't know. There is like some shorthand, obviously. Yeah. And then there's also like the same old stuff that we might argue over. We're going to argue over here at the job.
Yeah, the thing is like because we argue a lot. Like we all like arguing about comedy. That's like the problem about what you're talking about. Is we all will love to argue about like one specific. Like that shot in Pillow Love. Shot in Pillow Love, where the camera pans back over to the pillow after the fight.
For those who want to look it up online, it's now called Awesome Fight Scene.
Awesome Fight Scene, our first sketch in the UCB run. I still don't even remember what it was, but we argued for so long about that shot because there was a couple like imperfect elements to what we wanted.
There's a couple ways to do it. You know, you go, you're transitioning from this fight scene into this like sad death of a cute pillow that's going to be stop motion. There's a lot of ways filmmaking wise to transition, and we just could not agree on it. We argued over it for must have been like an hour and 15 minutes.
Yeah.
after a long day of shooting action scene.
Yeah.
But that's good, man. That's what you got to be doing.
That's what you got to do.
As long as everybody's opinion is like a valid opinion, if you know what I mean. Because we all like trust each other that like we're not arguing for like asinine things. It's like these are both valid ways to do it.
Yeah, it's never about ego. It's always about I really think this is the best way to do it. I'm so sure it's the best way to do it that we're just going to argue about it. And what's fascinating is having won those arguments and having lost those arguments. Every time I lost, it was right. You know, it was like the right. Yeah. We always end up with the best thing.
Yeah.
I think.
Also, like most of the time, I don't even remember if I won or lost because, like, it's just like the group figured it out. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like that's what's important.
Yeah. In fact, I think we flipped when later we got into the edit. Now, like a year later, editing Awesome Fight Scene, we were like, hey, I thought it was going to be like this. It was like, I thought it was going to be like this. And then I looked back and I was like, I think we were flipped on our opinions there.
That's really funny.
Yeah.
And as far as the Whale Thief stuff, can you talk about the other stuff you got going on? You move some stuff?
We can talk about probably some of the stuff. We are pitching. We could probably talk that. We're pitching around TV Cram as a show. We've had some interest in stuff like that. Funny or Die is producing with us a television version of Sketch Cram, basically a television version of Movie Cram,
which would
be super exciting. Yeah. I think everybody would be so stoked. I think it would be because, you know, the Cram is just such this like beautiful idea, and to be able to translate it into another medium, a bigger medium like that would be so cool.
That's right.
And then we have a couple other things.
And you just continue to get a little bit more and more ambitious with that stuff. So that'd be the next logical step. Right?
Yeah, for sure.
As a group.
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah. We've said before, like Movie Cram was born out of thinking Sketch Cram got too easy.
Yeah.
And then, you know, maybe Movie Cram got a little too easy.
Yeah. Well, that's great.
Yeah.
All right. Last question. Mm. I would be remiss not to bring it up, guys. The email chain.
Oh,
the BCCCC email chain.
I feel bad talking about
the chain that changed the world.
Oh man!
Wow, is this what we're best known for?
Oh, that's great. I mean, we must be. So,
first of all, we should immediately throw Poitras under the bus. It's important to throw Poitras under the bus right away.
Sorry about that.
The year was 2014, and Sketchgram sent an email. And it was CC.
So this is what
BCC.
Happened. So how thoughtful we were at the beginning of Sketchgram, because it never would have happened under that. But so we amassed a massive contact list.
It's
but
an enormous
list.
It's
like hundreds of all the greatest people to come out of this generation of UCB.
People who now are famous enough that they probably had to change their email after that BCC email went out.
And so because we had started getting lazy, we would start, and we like didn't book enough people for a month. Then our last minute thing the week before is always like, all right, just send the blast, where we just email that whole chain, and normally in BCC and be like, hey, can you cram with us? But you know, it's tough to Gmail doesn't make it that easy to email a ton of people. You got to manage your contacts or things like that. So there's a few steps to it. And I was on vacation in Puerto Rico. I would normally have done it, I think. And I told Poitras some of the steps, and he got them all right. He did it all right, except he put everybody in CC instead of BCC.
And it just went wild.
It went wild.
It was huge. It was crazy.
It seemed safe for a minute. You know, it was like the quiet before the storm, and you know, like everybody's looking at it goes, oh, no. Oh, no. Someone's going to break it.
It broke certain people's phones.
Yeah.
And, like, important people. Christine Walters, who, thank God, she still wants to work with us after this. But she's, a producer at True Television.
Yeah.
It's been, like, True TV has been, like, a big supporter of ours. I think we, like, broke her phone.
Yeah. It ate up all the memory. It was too many email addresses. It was just as, like, oh, my
Kevin
God.
Kevin Hines, I think it broke his phone, too.
Yeah.
And it just,
I think Zach's own wife now, Caroline, I think it broke her phone. Who knows?
Yeah, it was world-changing.
But then Zach did one of the funniest bits at Sketchcram I've ever seen, where he put together a slideshow of like the week in history, basically, like this BCC debacle in history, admitting that it was totally threw himself under the bus.
You know, everybody blamed me initially. Everybody thought it was me.
Because it was from the Sketchcram email address.
Everyone was like, oh, stoned Kleinman probably. Like, what are you getting up for right now, man? Fuck you guys.
And this is not intended to reignite this thread.
please do not reignite.
Riley, let it die.
Alan, if you guys are listening to this, do not. This is not.
But it's definitely a memorable. Definitely in the history books. That'll be part of what gets written, guys.
Well, Nicole Byer had the best question of it because it popped up again like last summer, or like I don't know, in the spring or something. And so it started up just a little bit, and Nicole Byer said, "This is, please stop. Don't bring this back up. This is the worst thing that's ever happened to me, and both of my parents are dead."
Totally brutal.
And I think it shut it down. I think that's the last email in the chain.
Nicole Byer, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, guys, thanks for taking the time. We're excited about this new series.
We're so excited.
Let's see. We're excited for what's next, too.
Yeah, thanks.
Awesome. Thanks so much for having us.
Yeehaw.
Thank you.
And that will do it for episode number 31 of the UCB Digital Podcast. Thanks to Matt and Matt for sitting down and taking the time to chat with me. Their busy schedules. These guys are working full time at Funny or Die and The Onion, and it was nice of them to take a little lunch break, come over, and talk about their process. Hope you guys found it beneficial out there in podcast land. If you did, like, rate, subscribe on iTunes.com/UCB Comedy. Guys, we love those subscriptions. We love the ratings. And we'd love to hear from you. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter, where we're always tweeting out helpful filmmaking tips and tools and resources and articles. That's at UCB Digital on Twitter and slash UCB Digital Podcast on Facebook. You can check out new videos from UCB Comedy on Vimeo and Facebook and YouTube all the time, /UCB Comedy. Follow UCB Comedy on social media at UCB Comedy. Stay cool, everybody. And until next time. We'll see you on the internet.
This has been a UCB Comedy production. Check out our other shows on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network.